My name is Daniel Shu. I'm the Associate Director of the Innovations for Successful Successful Societies Project, and I'm here in Lesotho at the Inspectorate of Police. Mr. Makai, thank you very much for taking time out of your busy schedule to meet with me. And we've discussed the outline of our conversation and the parameters of it. And just before we start talking a little bit about the inspectorate and your work here, I wonder if you would mind just introducing yourself and just telling me a little bit about the position you hold now and perhaps some of the other positions you held before coming here.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Shaw. I think I'm pronouncing your name correctly.
Yes, you are. I hope I'm approaching pronouncing your name correctly.
Okay, yeah. My name is Motlepu. That's my Sotho name. Constantinus is my Christian name. Makhakh is my surname, family name. I'm working here at the police inspectorate. And I'm working as a deputy inspector of police. I've been here, it's my third year now. I joined this office in 2007. I was assistant commissioner of police before. So one of the reasons why I joined this office, I was recruited by the former inspector of police. I'm calling the former because he started in 2005. Mm-hmm. And then his contract ended last year, December. So I'm now left with the office. So far, I'm the one acting in his absence. So one of the reasons why I joined here, I was recruited by him because he thought to establish the office of this nature, you need somebody whose experience was a little bit more related with the police. So especially when it comes to the inspection part of it, because the office was not established for any other reason other than trying to inspect the policing in Lesotho. And even our law says that we inspect the policing in general in Lesotho. And again, we inspect the annual policing plan that is made by the Lesotho police. Fortunately, we have got only one police force in Lesotho. Mm-hmm. It's Lesotho Mounted Police Service. So I was in the office of the Commissioner of Police. The Commissioner of Police office is constituted by three offices: Commissioner himself, deputies, and assistant commissioners. Now in Lesotho, we have got one Commissioner of Police, two deputies, and eight assistant commissioner of police. So I was one of those people, and I had to make something called departmental transfer. So I'm no longer a policeman now, but I'm working in the institute or in the office which inspects the policing services in Lesotho. And it's a government office. So we are not only going to report about the efficiency and effectiveness in isolation with the government. We were entrusted to improve our inspection or evaluation or monitoring. It's meant to advise the minister to see to it that LMPS improves its services where there are some lacking. So if there is any good practice, that one has to be, or if there are some set standards, and then some people are not performing well, that is where what we check, and then we can always advise, okay, you are doing below the standard, or you are doing above the standard, and keep it up. That is entirely why we are here for. Yes.
You mentioned that the previous inspector had recruited you because he felt you had some experience that would be useful in this position.
Yes.
And I was wondering, what is the type of experience that you found to be helpful in manning this office and in carrying out its responsibilities?
I've been in the service myself. Mm-hmm. I know how to do about the policy. Mm-hmm. I should think so. And there are some things that you as a lay person might think, okay, this has been very effective, and of which it's not. We are, for instance, we are living in a democratic world now, and the human rights is one of the issues that or some of the yardstick that you engage the police. If the police are not respecting the human rights of the people that they serve, that could be a yardstick that, okay, these people, even if they are making some, they are policing, but they don't respect the human rights. Like, if somebody gets into a shop and then maybe steals something like a cookie or something, and then the police shoots him, no, that is a brutality.
Right.
And but the owner of the shop, maybe, oh, the police are efficient and they are effective. Those are some of the things that, okay, they have the standards, the norm. They've got the things that they have to adhere themselves with, like they have to use the minimum force. The minimum simply means it, the act itself should also be equal to what do you apply. You see, simply like put, I don't mm-hmm. know anything, but if you come with a knife, it's another thing other than if you come with your fist and then you fight a policeman with your fist. Right. And if a policeman said it was in self-defense and then he shoots you and you die. Those are some of the things that, okay, we need to have the police that will be effective, both to the criminals as well as to the victims as well. And then if the criminal has committed a crime, his has to be stopped to commit a crime or be arrested and then be put before the courts of law. That's it. And also, the victim has been victimized. The police may have to make all the measures to see to that they make all those preventative measures so much that they are not prone to criminals. They are, you see, they are not vulnerable. Police have to have things that will make people not fear crime. Yes, to be in a safe and secure place. That is basically what the police are. They have to provide security and safety to people. And how they do that, they tell us as police inspectorate that, okay, to ensure that we are going to do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then we will just come and then check on that one, inspect on that, and see the effectiveness of that. So that is basically on that. And then if those measures they want to put to prevent crime, they are not effective, that is when we can come. And even before, maybe they said, okay, we'll be doing this for the certain period of time, say 6 months or something. Mm-hmm. So for the first month, we can come and say, no, that would be just wasting a lot of resources and energy and money. If you keep on doing this for 6 months, it's not effective. It's not bearing some results. We had better stop it or you review it. The manner in which you are doing it, no, it doesn't help or it doesn't get into the intended results. That's how we are here.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So there must be quite a high level of cooperation between your office and between the high levels of the police itself, so that when they're doing these new initiatives and starting new programs, I can stop.
You're too much into a program.
No, I don't want to take you away from your work.
Right, okay.
Yeah. This is part two of the interview. So I was just saying that in order to effectively know what's happening within the police force so that you can inspect effectively, you must have quite a high degree of cooperation between your office and between the highest levels of the police who are implementing these new programs. And I was wondering, do you have regular meetings or do you base your inspections around the annual plan for the police? How do you go about sort of working with the police themselves?
I just want to refer myself back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Our office has been newly established.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the police did not work under the environment where there will be an outsider,
right,
the external audits, because they have the similar office like we do. It's called inspectorate. For them, it's inspectorate, discipline, and complaints,
mm-hmm.
where they have got their own internal audits. They check whether the police are still doing their thing. So like whether the uniform is being worn mm-hmm. properly, all those kind of attending their job duties on time and things like that. They have such kind of mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
For us, on our side, we have now, I think we can do everything that tarnishes anything that is going to be an effective or efficient policy.
Mm-hmm.
So that means we get into strategies, policies, and then see if those things are working. And we, like we have always been saying, we shouldn't be understood to be some intruders of some sort,
right.
Like we are going to be coming, infringing ourselves into their day-to-day duties like that. See, all the power, the powers, operational powers, rest with the police, the mm-hmm. commissioner of police.
Mm-hmm.
So we ourselves, we just come there as observers. We don't have anything to do like Mr. Fix-It, like saying, yo, you are, this roadblock should not be, it's not done this way. No, my only can just observe and said, okay, these people said they are going to mend their roadblocks this way, but now they said they are going to have about 8 people. The one will be here and there and there and there. But what I see now is only one person. What is happening? I can phone the authorities and said, I am at a certain place. I see a policeman here trying to make something that you called this and that and that. How about that? So they can make some instant corrections like that. Ours, we just target the things that can have an impact in the policing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Not the nitty-gritties that the policeman came late at work or drunk, but if that drunkenness now it's something that people talk about, they said, oh, you go to this station, you always find those people drunk. We can go and then find ourselves and then inspect. They said, okay, this impacts negatively on the efficient or the effectiveness of policy. So if the discipline is not being well observed, that is a thing that we can come about. So now, to come straight to your question. Now, of course, there was that sort of a resentment that, okay,
mm-hmm.
these people, they think they, and knowing the police are rank conscious, they just wanted to know, do we have any powers of some sort for them or things like that? Hence why there was a need. For our office and the authorities of LMPS to come and sit down. We can call it something like standard operating procedures.
Right. Right.
We had to sit down with them and then talk about that. We said, okay, I mean, the method of approach, how are we going to approach one another without compromising our duties? Because we get a mandate from the minister. They get the mandate of policing from the minister, from the same authority, and
right.
we call him police authority. Our minister will call him police authority. So I think why we had to do that, we also wanted them to know that we can come at any time, announced or unannounced, we can come. And then what we are going to check, they may be informed or not informed about that, because it will all depend on the nature of the duty that will be sent to do by the minister.
Mm-hmm.
At times you can go to the communities themselves, members of the community. They can tell if these people are really of some helpful. For instance, maybe we check the public reports.
Mm-hmm.
So they will tell, okay, after I reported my case before the police, I never had any police to come and visit the scene of crime. I don't even know who is handling my case. I don't even know the stage of the investigation up to now. Every time I take a phone, I'll just be told, oh, police are still investigating. And those kind of the things, we want them to, no. You had better, that person is entitled to know every stage of your investigation. And then you cannot just say it's a police thing.
Right.
Gone are those days. Now we are in a democratic. We have to police in the manner in which we focus on the community. We have the community oriented policy. So those are some of the things. So I think in those standard operating procedures, we pointed out clearly that it is not to mean memorandum of understanding, like rubbing shoulders and things like that, or being at loggerheads. It's not about who has got powers on whose. Who, and then it's not about who has got rights over or who. It was all about what is necessary. And what is necessary is to have an effective policy that is going to be applauded by the people that we police, or the community that is being served, or the policing activities are being rendered upon. That is will be our point of departure and our point of arrival. And it has to be like that, yes.
So could I ask how I mean, your mandate seems to be much broader than, mm-hmm. say, the Police Complaints Authority. Mm-hmm. And you seem to have more responsibility to sort of be very active in looking and saying, well, this doesn't look like it's working, this doesn't look like it's working, mm-hmm. as opposed to the Police Complaints Authority, who wait for somebody to come and say to them, this isn't working. Would that be fair to say that that's how your office is separate from the activities of the Police Complaints Authority?
Yeah, in some countries, maybe to avoid confusion.
Yes,
mm-hmm. It's one office, mm-hmm. like a police inspectorate. The duties I've just mentioned a few of them, and police complaints. It's another desk within that. And police directorate. It's another desk within that. So so much that you can have one person that is. Overseeing all these offices like that. But again, it's better if we have an independent body, so much that even if the commissioner, because all these other offices are police supporting services, and they are there to support the police service, hence why I call them policing support services. Yeah. So, but now, another danger can be what? If that person who is the pivotal point around which these offices rotate, if he is not or she is not in good terms with the commissioner of police, that could be another issue. Said, okay, he will be of much influence to the other, this desk, that, okay, they do like that. So there is always pros and cons in everything. It depends on how you see it. But if it comes to a point that, okay, this office is, when there are too many now, mm-hmm. why can't we just unify them and then form into one thing? It all depends on the behavior and all the and all the rest. But as of now, I think that semi-autonomy, it's okay for all those offices, so much that they can have a different, not biased approach to everything that we do. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I see. Mm-hmm. Now, I wonder if we can just go back a little bit, sort of, more historically, I guess, and if you could tell me a little bit about the challenges that the city police were facing that led to the creation of this office, because as we said earlier, the office mm-hmm. is still fairly okay. new, 5 years old. So where was the drive for the creation of this office?
Okay, the Lesotho history starts in 1966, the political history. Mm-hmm. It was then under the protectorate of British. So in 1966, that's when they got their full independence. Now, that meant the democratic, whatever, form of government, till 1970. So the minister, the prime minister of the then, when he saw that the elections were not okay, so he said, state of emergency, declared the state of emergency until 1996. We had a coup here. 96 until 92, I think, or 1991. So during that military regime, of course, military regime will be a military regime. So there came the democratically elected form of government. Mm-hmm. It was 1992. Mm-hmm. 1992. And they had some consultants. They called some consultants and said, okay, what do police do in a democratic world? They found out that, okay, Lesotho police were still under the Ministry of Defense. Mm-hmm. Soldiers and National Security Services, they were still under the same ministry. No, they said, okay, the police in almost every democratic country, it's answerable to the Ministry of Home Affairs, because it talks about the national security as far as it's within the country, the national security, the public security. So there came something like a white paper. So they suggested to the government that, okay, you need to separate the police from the Ministry of Defense, and then they should be answerable to the Minister of Home Affairs. And now when you talk about the policy, now we talk about the community policy, that is community-oriented policy. No, this, of course, made some hiccups, and we had some strikes. Even the police went for strikes because people will just come, you know, the politicians will just come and influence the police. Say, okay, you see, now the government is coming, it's divide and rule and all such kind of things. And yet they wanted to separate police from, so that did not, of course, touch the police well.
Yeah.
Until 1998, now there was this law that was enacted that, okay, the police will be this way.
Okay.
Yeah. So it had that little history that, okay, we did not understand, or the police did not understand that this new notion, they have to be answerable to the nation. This, like, the people will have powers now to ask the police, or whereas during the previous years, it was only enough for the police to say, no, your case is being is under review or is being investigated, and that will be all. So, and they even suggested the offices of this nature, like my office, that now in a democratic world, we need to have people who can come to the police and then probe on behalf of the community. Say, you said you were still under investigation, but when we get into the investigations, we found that we are not doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think the effectiveness and efficiencies are along those lines, that, okay, you have the resources. Are you optimally using these resources, or there are a lot of misuse and what? And then where is the policy of your handling the or management of the resources and things like that? You understand? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, I see. It strikes me that your job must be very difficult because, as you say, and as you have in your brochure here, the office of the Inspector of Police should not be viewed as a negative or an unwelcome influence.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you want to have enough to be viewed with enough authority that if you say this should be done differently, or we aren't, you know, we don't think this is the way it should be done, you want the police to respond and change and become more effective and more efficient.
Yeah.
So it strikes me you're walking a very, very delicate line between trying to be supportive but also wanting things to change.
Yeah. Of course, we are the agent of change. But the manner in which we do it, if we live outside the human element, things will be okay. Because I should not appear to them as somebody with some powers to them to tell them what they should do. I should always come to them telling them that this is what the minister has told me to do and see. You see, I should always, I have to see to it that, okay, all the powers that I have, if I have, they emanate from the minister.
The same place that
they come from the minister. I shouldn't be going there to be seen and to be, I mean, something that when I come, everybody have to shiver, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the problem is. And then if that is the attitude that I can pose, I think that could trigger some things, unwanted some results. And but now I will always have to tell them, okay, the minister has told me to come and then look on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So much that they don't look at me as makhakh, like I'm makhakh. Yeah. So they should understand the office. If at all they want the power, I'm infested with the official powers from the minister. That's all. Not me as a human being. Even if I have something, they can also go and report. No, this guy, when he comes here, he doesn't want to talk to us. The manner in which he does things, you know, it's because there are some things that are very sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that I cannot just come there as and when I want. I can say, okay, open the armory. I mean, at night, to see things like this. So I have to come formally, then tell them, okay, I want to see how you handle your weapons. Because I see that there are a lot of people, if I can cite an example, there was a shooting incident that involved the police. It was the service firearm. And now it's the 10th incident that we get. How do you manage your weapons? Is there anybody who's registering them and knowing? Can you show me where this gun now, where is it? Yeah, those are some of the things, the surprise checks that you can do. Or if you don't know, that is what, there could be some issues if you don't even know that your gun has been taken or it has been sold and things like that. If there is mismanagement of resources, a lot of things can happen. So those are some of the things that will come. And we don't have to argue with them. I was just to check if they have got the registers. Okay, can I see a pistol, the number so and so? Where is it now? You will be able to know, you get to your reference book. You said, okay, this pistol has been offered to officer so and so. They are out on work. And I can come tomorrow and check. No, so and so, I saw him, he's back at work now. Where is the pistol? Oh, that officer told me that he left it at home. You can see that, okay, there's not enough, something like that. So those are some of the things that we come, like we are new in the office, but they will understand why we do that. It's not, it's also to protect them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, even also to manage the police that they have, of course, because they will say, if they fear to tell them frankly, they will say, if those police inspectorate people come, they will not, don't want those people to come and find us like this, you see.
So could we stick with that example, just hypothetically? So let's say you did ask for this particular firearm and the person wasn't able to tell you where it was. Then what is your responsibility from there? Do you write a report to the minister? Does your office get involved and say, okay, well, clearly you have a problem with managing your firearms. Here's how we think you should be doing it. Or how does the process work from there on?
The process works.